The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast on the Diamantina Podcast Network. Well, what has happened in the last, say, 8 days since we last convened? Well, let's start off with Warner walked off. That happened almost about a year ago. The Culture Review came out. The whole question of should Smith and Warner return. Then, of course, Peaver got sacked. The whole elite honesty thing. There was a record loss of South Africa yesterday. And this afternoon, Mark Taylor stepped down from the board. So we're going to try our best as we can to speak about that within the time frame of about 20 minutes, which we'll probably fail with miserably. Then after that, Dan Brediger's on the show to try and talk serious cricket in better ways that we certainly can. Oh, yeah, by the way, Adam Gilchrist is on the show. How do you match a show with Steve Waugh and Tim Payne on the previous show? Well, you just have one of the greatest cricketers of all time. Adam Gilchrist is on the show in a moment's time. However, big news from our end before then is that we have live shows all around the country. If you like this podcast so much that you want to come along and see it in person live, well, we're coming to your city if you live in Australia where there are test matches. Adelaide, Thursday, December 6th, 7 p.m. at the Rhino Room. Then Perth, we're going to the Wacker on Friday, December 14. We're going to be in Melbourne, day two of the test match on the 27th of December. Whereabouts, he goes? The Corner Hotel. And then to wrap up the Indian leg of the tour in Sydney, Thursday, January 3. Tickets, if you want to know, go to our Facebook page. There is a live event there and you'll be able to acquire all your tickets. And then, of course, after that in January, we'll be doing the Sri Lankan tour in Brisbane and Canberra. Wow. My name is Ian Higgins, and I am joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Welcome, boys.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for welcoming. And here we are in person again. Can we start by saying, as well, just on all matters administrative, thank you for sending us number one for about 4 hours in the podcast charts last week before Howie got back on top. G'day, Howie. But thank you for that. Obviously, we only deal in Australian cricket captains now as guests, so yeah, another reason why our show will run into a quick conclusion pretty quickly. Australian cricket has caved in. Probably not since the last time we chatted. I think the cave was already starting to crumble, but it really has caved in. He goes, that laundry list that you read out was is jarring listening. Yeah. But and I feel like we're now at the point where like this is now a full scale identity crisis. So it's right in our wheelhouse. But I don't even really know where to start. I mean, I think the real, like, the overarching thing in the last couple of days was the Culture Review. Like, what a rich, meaty term that is. And it was, a meaty document, 145 pages or something. I mean, we obviously all read it. Word for word.
Every single word. Even the redacted ones.
Exactly. But wasn't it amazing? I mean, I think we should, though, start with what happened immediately after we put our podcast out, which was David Warner walking off the field. We'll have the final word on it. I mean, everyone's talked about it, but this is great cricket. I mean, like, Dave, thoughts, Warner leaving.
Well, it's amazing that he was able to execute an alpha play just at every turn. There's always an opportunity. I've never seen it before. Have you guys ever seen anyone just walk off the field and then walk back on, not for like a toilet break or some kind of medical emergency, but just, you know, didn't fancy the chat?
It feels very akin to, you know, WG Grace being bowled, putting the bails back on. And you go, no, I will continue to play now. That felt very 2018 of David. My view on it was that, like, and that incident is almost encapsulated by the whole thing that's happened since March in Cape Town, in that I think Warner has been made to take almost entirely all of the blame for what's happened. Of course, since then, even to the point this afternoon where Mark Taylor has stepped down from the board, a direct consequence of their South African tour. But whilst Steve Smith has his renaissance in grey cricket and is celebrated for everything he's doing, big crowds turning out, Dave Warner's having the pole opposite effect where he's like, okay, he is actually the worst bloke in Australian cricket history. And that's not my opinion. That's on Wikipedia.
The Fox Sports article said that.
Yes, it did. I just think it's really unfair that he's been tainted that way. I think there are so many reasons to not like David Warner across the world. Yeah. but I don't think he should take all the blame for what happened in South Africa like he is.
I mean, to his absolute credit, though, he is just plundering runs. Like, he's been told,
what about the runs, chat?
Mate, go back to grade cricket and prove yourself. And he's actually hitting a lot of fucking runs.
Yeah.
Like, we're not even talking about the runs that he's hitting in an era where runs are, you know, an absolute dearth of runs in Australian cricket across the board.
I think, I hadn't appreciated that you could interpret what Warner did through the alpha prism. I'm just out of here. I'm done. Like in the backyard, no need a break. See you later.
Yeah.
I interpreted it more through a mental health prism, somewhat more earnestly. Yeah. You know, it is funny, like, and as you guys say what you're saying, like, there's too much going on for us to deal with this in segment one. So we're going to miss heaps of stuff. Apologies. Just on the Warner stuff as well, though, like, it just occurs to me that a couple of other things have happened around his walk-off. Like, you know, I encourage everybody to read Gideon Haig's piece on Moses Omriks that came out in last weekend's Good Week. No, the Australian version of the Good Weekend. Mm. Sorry, News Limited. And then, obviously, the news of Will Pekowski as well, taking an indefinite break for mental health issues. Obviously, like, there's probably a false equivalence between all of them, but, like, it just occurs to me, like, there's something's really building when it comes to this kind of stuff. Mm. And I think there is a lot on Warner's shoulders, and it's not a binary question. Like, he can be a guy that makes mistakes or be a guy that you don't like or you dislike, and he can also be unfairly treated at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I find that really interesting, Pez, because I think I still go back to the thought of, like, what they actually did. And it was, like, I think it was the incident of the ball tampering and, like, that they brought Sam Pepper to the field. I just think it was fucking stupid. Mm. Like, we've gone on in the past about how, like, ball tampering happens in 100% of cricket matches in some capacity. What they did was so insanely dumb that it deserved punishment. But, like, the fact that the people, like, the board is changing per day. Mm. Guys have just, like, lost their livelihoods. Like, the fine is just incredible. Their legacies are being tainted. And I can't help think, but for what? And I agree that what's been happening with specifically Dave Warner says to me, and Pez, we've spoken about this previously as well, is just, like, he strikes me as someone who's really struggling. And how could you blame him as well? Mm. You know, like, he was also, of the three guys, the only one to not actually get a suspension from the ICC, yet he is copping a greater punishment.
Yeah. And, like, don't you feel like with the culture of year, right, just, you know, this is earnest chat on the grey cricketer, that, like, so much of what has come out seems to refer to the period from the Argus report to the culture review.
Right.
And really, like, most people are acknowledging that, like, this stuff runs so deep and has gone, it goes back decades. Mm. And it's like the sandpaper event was just the kind of culmination point of all of that. Mm. And to that end, I can see why the ACA, for example, were like, these boys are sorry, let's bring them back a bit early.
Yeah.
What they did is not worth 12 months. Like, the disrepute that they brought to the game is actually the culmination of stuff many, many, many people have done, except that they're just carrying it.
Yes.
I do take Malcolm Knox's point, though, that perhaps Steve Smith could kind of erase all of this by saying, no, I'm just going to cop the ban and then we'll carry on afterwards.
Mm.
If you had to deep dive, you know, the problems with Australian cricket now, you have to go back well before the Argus review. You have to go back to Bradman. You have to go back to colonialism.
That's right.
You have to, like, consult Australian history, you know, from invasion onwards.
Yeah.
Doesn't this all stem basically from, like, when, you know, the settlers came here and they just said, Terra Nullius, there's no one else here. That's when this really actually started.
That's when it started. Yeah, invaders.
Yes, the invaders.
Anyway,
yes.
Lost half our audience.
Cool, lost half the audience. So the fallout continues. And it's so hard because, but even before we came to air just like today, we were just saying, like, how do we make this funny? Because, like, that's what this show is supposed to be.
But there's
such an earnest reflection about Australian culture, because I think that what's happening with the Australian cricket team is almost a reflection of Australian society, because, like, our identity is being questioned and we don't really know how to go about it.
We don't know who we are.
Shane Warne was on the commentary yesterday just saying, well, we just need to be harder.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, like, that's literally how we got in this position,
how
Shane.
How good is the last generation talking about Australian cricket at the moment? Like, they just won all the time. And then it's like, just be aggressive and just play well.
But it's always like the most naturally talented players of a generation. That's just say, just play cricket. Just pick up a ball. Just spin it. Make it turn. Hit a ball. Hit it for six. We did it. Why can't you guys do
it? Exactly. Notwithstanding that they just grew up in an entirely different scenario. Not the internet generation. They didn't have, you know, 24/7 news cycles all over them, all over their ass. They probably had jobs growing up as well. Like, whereas these guys today just have been in the system for a long time. They've been systematized. conditioned. They don't know what's going on. It's good stuff.
But Mark Waugh in the one day, which we'll get to in a moment, I'm sure, yesterday just said, Australia just need to start winning games of cricket. Yeah. Like, at this point, we just need to start winning games of cricket. Like, there's so much talk, and a lot of it quite politically charged in nature, about restructuring and reshaping in an identity and the academic approach that we've taken in the first 6 minutes of this episode. Yeah. Let's just fucking win some cricket.
Just win. Haven't you considered the idea of just winning
just
the game?
Win.
Do you remember, like, 10 years ago when Mark Waugh just started his commentary career and we were, like, on a Bunsen burner in India? Mm. I may have told this story in the cast before, but it still just sticks with me. They threw to him at a drinks break, and Australia was sort of 3 for not many. Mm. And he's like, I just don't understand why they don't just hit Harbhajan on the full. just get him on the full.
Something about Mark Waugh is like, I just don't rate off spinners.
Yeah.
Just like a blanket statement across the board. But you're an off spinner.
So going back to the culture review, and apologies, listeners, because we are all over the place, but part of that review was the Players Pact, which included some key catchphrases. Mm. And if you can sum up, you know, any sort of systemic failures in any organisation, just a few key catchphrases might re-engage the public. And one of those was elite honesty, which is now emblazoned all over the Optus Stadium dressing room there in Perth. And that didn't work because we got bowled out for 156. Aaron Finch famously being perhaps a little bit too elitely honest by being LBW and not reviewing. Mm. But the umpire gave him out, so he thought, no, honesty.
We thought it might be an idea to see if we could organise at a really, like, quick moment's notice an actual, like, philosopher to discuss honesty and notions of objectivity. Because, you know, I think one of the theories is that objectivity is in the eye of the beholder. There's no such thing as objective truth other than sort of 2 + 2 = 4. Everything else is just subjective. So what is there a hierarchy of honesty available in life? And if so, what is it? And if so, can I have it? Because I don't know what it is. I feel like elite honesty is going to become an extremely thrashed out meme in about 2 or 3 days.
It's the new Watson review, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a meme that's going to be thrashed to death. You can't just add elite as a prefix, or prefix, should I say, to everything, can you?
Rules.
Well, one thing that is binary is Faf du Plessis has the greatest rig in cricket history, and he's back on our shores. Nice to see Faf back. Pez, you personally reached out to the South African Press Pack to try and get Faf on the show.
Yeah, it was an extremely elongated message to the South African media managers. Mm-hmm. There's two of them, actually. I won't read all of it, but it was a fairly long explanation because we don't have a whole bunch of South African fans. So I sort of described what the great cricketer was, what we're into, that we're really big fans of Faf, especially his rig. We have X amount of listeners. Mm. You can endear yourself to the Australian public, etc. I had a pretty prompt reply. I won't say who the media manager's name is, but it's, hi, Sam, thanks for your mail. Unfortunately, Faf is not available to do this interview. Regards.
And then you quickly replied.
I quickly replied straight away. Okay, he's on the computer. I'm going to go back quickly. I appreciate the reply. To be clear, if we found the optimal time, would this change things? I haven't received a reply yet. So I think it's fair to say, unless there's an exclusive with ACA or something like that, as in a current affair, I don't think South Africa are putting Faf du Plessis up to discuss Australian cricket identity. Fair enough, but it would have been great to talk about his rig. So if you are listening, Faf, you're more than welcome on this show.
Okay, so let's get to the game itself. Australia continues to not be able to bat. It's becoming an issue. And I think I even said last week on the podcast, I can't remember, but I think I said, at what point do we stop having record lows? And this first match back in Australia, and we received a new record low by losing to South Africa for the sixth time.
That was last week.
That was last week. Yeah, it's hard to. I mean, they both have green, you know, jerseys, or whatever. So he said to himself. Sixth time we've lost to South Africa in a row. I think of the last 25 ODI matches, we have won 6 of the last 25 ODIs that we've played.
Why were we expecting anything different?
I'm not sure.
But I did, because Australia, you know, it's summer and it's one day, and you just turn the TV on and you're hoping that Australia's going to be like 1 for 80 off 13 when I turn the TV on, and we were like 3 for 8 or something horrendous. Mm. And the only reason I turned on the television, because I was reminded that there was cricket on. I didn't know, because it's obviously behind a paywall, etc. Cricketers, you've never seen it before, though, mind.
You've never seen it.
Cricketer got a little shout-out.
I think it might just skid on.
I refer to the great cricketer here, and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
And then I think Mark Waugh and Howie were on commentary, and they kind of gave like a polite giggle.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mark Waugh knows all about the great cricketer.
Yeah.
Mark Howe's scared of us because we're threatening him for number one on sports charts.
What is the great crickets? Do you guys not think that that Warner and Smith being banned is kind of papering over some cracks, because, like, it's not like there are 5 other blokes who are also suspended or injured. Like, the current batting lineup is actually the best that there is. There's not like a guy in Shield cricket who we're just hiding who's already got like 10,000 first class runs.
Like, yeah, like Jamie Siddons.
Doesn't exist. Yeah. Martin Love, you know, a Darren Lehman, if you will. Will
it's,
you?
Yeah. It's really curious because it would be easy to say, well, yeah, but it's not profitable anymore to bat long in cricket. But like, surely that also applies to every other country and they seem to be able to bat as well. So I think there's something like uniquely and systemically wrong with Australian batting, not just Australian cricket overall, but batting itself. Bowling's okay.
Bowling's good.
But what's wrong with our batting? Kerry did suggest on Fox Sports show yesterday that that Darcy Short was a victim of the wanger, which was hilarious in and of itself, but I think he's referring to those like those dog throwers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm going to try and get to the bottom of it in a piece for The Guardian this Friday. I am, but yeah, there's something wrong with the batting. We should be producing sort of raw country kids coming through who just want to score runs for fun.
Who just grow up in like quarter acre blocks in regional New South Wales with like five siblings and just hit runs relentlessly for their entire lives until they play for Australia at 19. Like Gilly, who's coming on the show later.
There is something quite amazing, though. I had a quick little look at the odds for who's going to win the next World Cup, famously in England next year, just before about a week and a half before the Ashes start. And India and England are favourites, and the third favourite team to win the World Cup next year is Australia. So, like, why? We're not very good at them.
I think it's the same as what Dave was saying before. Dave thought we would win yesterday, as I did, because it was summer. Like you just walk outside and like lick your finger and stick it in the air and go, oh, that's the season, we win. And I think that we do forget that, like, especially overseas, a lot of people, I mean, the fear around the Australian cricket team is definitely diminishing, but it's still there. I remember talking to people in London about this, and they just, and I said, look, Australian cricket's not that good anymore. Like, yeah, they sort of say, yeah, but we're still mentally disintegrated. I still think people are getting over it. So we just sort of, out of respect, are placed third, even though none of our results suggest that we should be. We should be.
Okay. So we'll just round out this this part one before Dan Brittig and then Adam Gilchrist come on the show. So Mark Taylor left, Peaver obviously as well, a few days before. Is this sort of a signal that like everyone is so taken aback by like what's happened that they're just like kind of jumping ship, or is this, you know, Mark Taylor released a statement saying, you know, now's the right time for a fresh change, etc., etc.? Obviously the right things to say, but is it a bit like, well, this has gone to shit, so I'm just going to jump ship?
I don't think he's like jumping, like I don't think he's rats off a sinking ship. I think Taylor, most people sort of say that Taylor's quite a decent guy, and he has cricket's best interests at heart, but he probably recognises that, you know, if he was part of steering the ship that got us into this trouble, then he can't be part of fixing it. There has to be fresh people on board, and that's why there's such a conversation at the moment about who should replace him. You know, we can see on Twitter that people are starting to call for, like, basically the Good Blokes 11. Anyone who's in the Good Blokes 11 is in, so I see Katic's name being thrown about. Friend of the show, obviously.
I think favourite part of this whole, you know, Peaver stepping down thing was the role that the New South Wales chairman had. You know, obviously Sydney Test cricket is the most important and celebrated form of amateur cricket in the world. And it's just good to see the New South Wales CEO just alphering, getting amongst it, making that phone call. See you later.
So remember as a kid when, like, in a 92 World Cup warm-up match, New South Wales played Australia and it was a tie and I was going for New South Wales? I didn't realise that parochialism ran that strong. Yeah, extremely deep-seated.
I just still am reminded of, like, when Australia was so good that they had to put Australia A into, like, the tri-series to, like, make it competitive. And and consistently it was Australia A versus Australia in a tri-series final.
And I loved Australia A.
Yeah.
Always.
But that's because they had, like, that generation, like Damien Martin, Hayden, Ponting. Just like that was who was in Australia A at
Phil
the time.
Emery.
Phil Emery. Yeah, yeah.
Mark Atkinson.
All right, Dan Brittig coming up. Then after that, Adam Gilchrist.
I don't play cricket for results. I don't come to take wickets, score runs, or win games. I play cricket to look good. Rigs, chests, pipes, circuits, salads. This is my domain. So when I hit the sheds, I need to radiate success. That's why I use Chop King Cologne by TGC. With a blend of the finest handcrafted English willow and Kookaburra Red King leather, Chop King Cologne lets me radiate cricket. Whatever the ground, whatever the circuit. Shopkin Cologne. The new fragrance for men by TGC. Reek of runs without hitting them.
Well, fellas, the guy that we've got on here today has been covering this major identity crisis in Australian cricket as well as anybody, if not better than anybody else. He's the assistant editor of ESPN Crick Info. You should read his pieces. They're as detailed as they are salacious. He must be being briefed by everybody. So we're going to get him to tell us all about that and not reveal any sources, but also can you reveal sources? Dan Breddy, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, guys, and no, I most definitely cannot.
Okay, cool. Professional. Very good. Well, just thought we'd check anyway before you admitted to something that would help you lose your job. Dan, tell us what is going on with this identity crisis. I mean, like how serious is this in the context of everything that's ever happened in Australian cricket?
There have been lots of things this year that have been unprecedented. I think the most significant, certainly in the last week, was a chairman of Cricket Australia resigning or being forced to resign before he'd actually finished his elected term. That's never happened in the history of Cricket Australia / the ACB, which has lasted for well over a century. So that tells us the degree of uncharted territory we're in.
And you yourself have obviously been, you know, hearing whispers in corridors and really covering this from the ground and testament to you because some of those pieces have been fascinating reading. Can you kind of run us through your process? I mean, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of things being said, but only a select few are privy to those conversations, I guess.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is about knowledge accumulated over time. I say quite often to people that information that may not seem important or overly useful at an earlier period may later become very useful or even critical as events further develop. I think it's always important to have a concept of the background as well as the foreground of events. You know, what links one person to another? What links one event to another? And in terms of what we've seen over the past week or so, it's just really a kind of a conflagration of a whole lot of different elements. Whether it's the release of the cultural review, the state of the Cricket Australia board in terms of the chairman looking for another 3 years, ostensibly because there's a new CEO, but hang on, the new CEO is an internal candidate or an internal choice who's been involved at Cricket Australia as long as the chairman has been. Therefore, why then do you need to extend your term as chairman? And then why do you need to try to extend your term as chairman without full visibility around what's in the cultural review that you yourself commissioned? So all of those things coming together over the past week, and even as we've seen in very recent events, Mark Taylor resigning from the Cricket Australia board after a long time. Now, that doesn't happen, I don't think, if he hadn't been such an ardent supporter of David Peaver as the chairman.
So, Dan, over the last sort of 6 months, it's been what happens in South Africa into player sanctions, into culture review, Peaver leaves, and then, yeah, as you say just there this afternoon, you know, longest serving member of the board, 13 years or something, Mark Taylor steps down. So how much worse does this get for Cricket Australia, for Australian cricket as a whole?
Well, Mark Taylor has said himself he hopes that the purge or the bloodletting, whatever you want to call it. Ironically enough, I watched The Death of Stalin for the first time the other night, and that seemed really, really appropriate timing in terms of that film. But yeah, he's indicated that he hopes that it stops with him. I still think there are questions to be asked of other board directors in terms of how they could support the chairmanship of someone who was so clearly inadequate, certainly to the task of being a front person, a spokesperson for Cricket Australia, and how that was allowed to perpetuate for so long. I think something else that comes into this in terms of, you know, how much further does it go or how bad does it get is how quickly Kevin Roberts can assert himself as the new CEO. something that has been very much of a standout to me is the moment James Sutherland leaves the building, a lot of people who may have been more careful in considering whether to throw rocks at Cricket Australia while James was there are now much more free in deciding to. And that's a situation that that Roberts in particular is going to have to take control of. And he's known for a lot of polish and for a lot of ability to pitch successfully. He is a salesman by career in the corporate sector. So the question is really whether he's going to be able to tell a fresh story that people are going to find credibility in pretty quickly.
Well, Dan, if Roberts is a product of the old regime, and as many people kind of say, has been tethered to David Peaver, both in kind of when they started, but also the sorts of things that they were advocating, and Peaver has fallen on his sword, albeit reluctantly, like, what kind of tenability does Kevin Roberts have? Like, I mean, will he not always be seen as kind of the guy who carried the can for David Peaver? I mean, can he take Cricket Australia forward?
I think he's known from the moment that he got the job that he was starting from a long way back. I remember, and it feels like a long time ago now, the announcement of him taking over from James Sutherland, which was at the start of October. I asked him directly, you know, how can you convince the Australian cricket public that you're the person to take the organisation forward, given your history? And he said, well, you know, all I can do is be judged on my actions, not on my words, and this isn't something that I can spin. And I think, you know, there was some authenticity in him saying that. Now, what may happen and what may be happening for him at the moment is the chairman going, obviously James Sutherland had already gone, Mark Taylor's now gone. Another one who's gone, who is a little bit under the radar, was Tony Harrison, a long time board director, also based in Tasmania. He retired at the AGM. These changes provide vacancies that allow for fresh blood, which Roberts is going to have to work with while trying to convince the Australian cricket public, as I say, that as CEO, with control, with authority, he can chart a new path, and I suppose try to indicate that he wasn't necessarily as in control of previous events as he might be now.
Dan, you mentioned fresh blood before, and it's funny talking about all this sort of stuff. I mean, I'm sure any club cricketer out there understands the kind of dryness of talking about committee stuff, and this is just that kind of times 10, but I guess it is important. You mentioned fresh blood before. You know, there's a lot of departures off the board. There's a lot of people talking about how Australia can become good blokes again, whether that's Alpha, Beta or otherwise. You know, who are the people you're hearing that might want to be on the board or that should be on the board? And I'm talking about who should be the new chairperson and who else should be on the board now that Taylor has departed as well. You know, give us the whispers. Who's in the running?
Well, I think there's already a bit of a campaign for Simon Cattish to join the Cricket Australia board. I think that it was interesting to note the other day that he made a public departure from the view of the Australian Cricketers Association in him publicly stating that Stephen Smith, David Warner and Cameron Bancroft should serve out their bans. I think that was a significant statement. I don't know if that was necessarily positioning by Cattish, but it's certainly the sort of message that would find him in that sort of middle ground, I guess, between the two camps. Another person, and maybe not her directly, but an example raised by Mark Taylor today was Alex Blackwell, who fairly recently joined the Cricket New South Wales board, and his expression that he hopes that he is replaced on the Cricket Australia board by someone with recent cricket playing experience, certainly much more recent than his own, and also someone potentially with that female cricket playing experience as part of their makeup, because of course there are a couple of women on the Cricket Australia board, Jackie Hay and Michelle Tredenick, but no one who comes from the playing quarter. Both Michelle and Jackie are from a corporate background, and in terms of seeing the overall picture, that sort of breadth of skills is why you have an independent board in the first place.
Dan, do you reckon all this is going to have an impact on how Australia play? Like we saw yesterday over there in Perth, the way the team performed, i.e. very poorly. And then pretty much since what's happened in Cape Town, it's been all bad news for Australian cricket. Do you actually think that all this stuff in the background, the sort of committee stuff, you know, Cricket Australia falling in basically, is this all going to have an impact on how the players play on the field, do you think?
I don't know if the board movement will, but certainly the amount of introspection that the Australian team has gone through has been reflected, I think, in seeing quite a few what I'd term as cloudy performances, where players look like they're hesitating or leaders look like they're overthinking. Mitchell Starc not taking the new ball yesterday looked to me just like a classic example of overthinking. We've had a losing streak. We need to change things up to try to get a better result. But really, I don't see where the Australian team's performance is going to improve by not giving Mitchell Starc the ball when it's at its newest and most likely to swing. I just don't see the point in doing that. Other than that's the result of a lot of conversations, a lot of meetings, a lot of thinking, and probably overthinking. And I think that's the cloud really that the team needs to emerge from. And that's made harder by the fact, of course, that there are a couple of leading lights in terms of the batting who aren't available.
I know that when I played grade cricket, I was always at my worst when I was thinking about the composition of the governance of the team that I was involved in. And there were many teams that I was involved in, so I can understand how that might affect them.
Well, one of the great things about club cricket, of course, is a club president goes out to bat. the chairman won't be coming out to bat in the test series against India this summer, you know, unless they make an extremely surprising and controversial call and anoint Travis Head as the chairman.
Or bring back Simon Cadditch into the team, as he deserves. Dan Brady, thanks a million for that. Obviously, your detail shines through there. Read Dan's articles at ESPN Crick Info. Cheers for joining us, mate.
Where's it all?
Are you sick of the same old sports drinks? Do you need a plastic bottle rolling around in the front seat of your car for 6 months that also doubles as a urine capsule for those extra long away days? Something that says, I think I'm strong, but I'm actually just chubby. Introducing Alpha Aid, the new number one electrolyte drink from TGC. Alpha Aid helps heal the four emotions you faced after a day in the field. Hope, shame, boredom, and loneliness. Drink it and you'll feel back to your old self in no time. Alpha Aid doubles as the perfect hangover cure too. Nothing makes you temporarily forget all those "hey, you up" texts like sipping on a cool glass of Alpha Aid while sitting in a blackened room trying not to drop your phone on your face. And now introducing Max Alpha Aid, the patented technology that will actually increase your size in the showers. Low on runs? Give yourself the few extra inches in the post-game showers you so desperately crave. It might just be enough to keep your spot in the side. Max Alpha Aid by TGC. For the man who has nothing to hide, but still wants to.
Well, boys, the Australian test captains continue. We can't even believe this is actually happening. Let me just read out some numbers. It's always about the numbers. 96 tests, 5,500 runs, an average of 47.6, so we'll call that 50-odd. 17 tonnes at test level, 9,600 ODI runs, we'll call that 10,000. 16 tonnes in that arena. 379 catches at test level, first hit 100 test sixes, widely regarded as one of the greatest, I'd say the greatest wicketkeeper batsman in the history of the game. He was a test captain, also regarded as being able to marry success with being a decent bloke, which I guess is relevant to today's conversation. He's our most requested guest. He once DM'd us a few years ago, and he also rejected a request he write the foreword to our first book, which on reflection was wise from him and ridiculous from us. It's the captain of the all-time good bloke 11, Adam Gilchrist. Gilly, hello.
Oh, gents, how are you? That's a very kind introduction. But the only thing I'd like to pull you up on, 50-odd. For the 47, you can't get it up to in and around 60. That's the terminology of the great cricketer.
There's no limit to how far you can get it up, mate.
Yeah, so somewhere around 60, I would have thought.
Okay, but 60-odd it is. Gilly, you came through the ranks of the late 80s, early 90s Sydney grade cricket system. You know, as you'd be well aware, all of us, me, Dave, Higos and yourself, are all Gordon club mates. what are your memories of grade cricket at that time, and what does it mean to you?
Oh, outstanding memories. And, you know, at this stage of my life and post-career, you know, it means a lot, I think, all the memories and recollections of that. Yeah, the mighty Stags had three seasons there, and we managed to have a couple of premierships, which was good. But it was just the pathway. That was what the pathway was in those days. It was particularly for a country bloke coming down, country kid coming from regional New South Wales, eyeing off Sydney Grey cricket, having played a bit of Green Shield cricket and then Poitevin Grey, you know, through the holidays, and then came out permanently. The pathway was slot in the lower grade somewhere, and I started in seconds at Gordon. Phil Emery was my roadblock. I think my very first game for Gordon was in ones, and then because Phil was on state duty, Phil Emery. The next week I went down to twos. And
how'd you go? Do you remember?
I think it was against Balmain, I need to check the records, but got a few runs and then managed to hold my spot in ones from there on in as a batsman. So whenever Phil came back, I managed to sneak into the slips or somewhere around there. Awesome. Just so, and I guess that's, I'll get the platitudes out of the way early. I guess that's what makes what you blokes are doing so relatable, because so many people have been through that great system where all the terminology, all the skullduggery and all the stupidity of grade cricket in amongst some blokes taking it pretty serious. It's just brilliant. It's a great breeding ground and unbelievable memories. They're right up there on par with memories of, you know, sitting around the change room and test match after a game celebrating. Geez, the club celebrations go pretty well too.
Well, interesting you say, Gilly, a good time for a segue here, because I actually reached out to some of your former teammates at the Stags, and you talk about the stupidity and the comparisons with the test level, but can you confirm that a magazine was passed around the Gordon dressing room by a senior unnamed player for all to touch as some sort of ritual?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit like Liverpool Football Club, soccer team as we call it, when they walk out at Anfield, they all touch the little badge of the sort of coat of arms, if you like, on the way out. And if you'd gone onto that field at Killara Oval or Chatswood Oval, as they play now, and you hadn't touched the, in inverted commas, Bible, you were in for a dark day. It was going to be a dark day, simple as that.
It's funny, nowadays in grade cricket, with the decline of print media, you actually just have to touch someone's iPhone. And it's not quite the same.
Well, you can imagine that. I mean, the irony was, and I know it's a politically correct world that we live in, but we did have a preacher in our team who actually, in his kit bag, did have the actual real version of the Bible. And I do remember, as sharp as a tongue a great cricketer can have, one of our guys, all unnamed, of course, but one of our guys saying, "Oh, mate, I've read that one. I didn't like the ending." So, that's the sort of stuff you're dealing with in club cricket change rooms, isn't it? But it's all good for the soul.
Speaking of the change rooms, Gilly, you played grade cricket alongside Kevin Roberts, who's the new CEO of Cricket Australia. Can you tell us a little bit about what he was like back then, including whether he showered after a game or not?
Well, most definitely, the Gordon boys, you had to shower. normally about 4 hours, with a bunch of fans, just quenching the thirst. But Robbo was, very, very talented cricketer, obviously played Shield cricket, went through Australian under-19s together and down at the Institute of Sport. It's funny where we all end up. And at that time, you would have told me that sneaking Kev Roberts was going to be CEO of Cricket Australia one day. I would have been a little bit surprised. But he was always a very, very smart young man, intelligent. He continued to study feverishly through the playing days, where all the rest of us took the easy option and said, oh, no, just focusing on the game. You know, we've got to get that right. But he was able to combine his studies and then move into the corporate world and do it very, very well.
We'll move into, a little bit later on in your career and beyond second grade at Gordon, Gilly. But sorry to fast forward through a whole bunch of stuff that happened for you. But it just strikes me, sort of in the current era of Australian cricket, where we're talking about, anyone who makes a score might be able to make the side. And I have a bit of an odd question for you. I mean, you had to perform for sort of 7 to 10 years in first-class cricket before getting a start in the test team. And I just sort of wondered, for a guy widely regarded as one of the game's greats, is there any part of you that wonders how much more you could have achieved in test cricket if you'd sort of been blooded like an 18-year-old prodigy, rather than having to wait so long?
I'd never sat back to reflect on that. I was selected. Oh, there's the dog. Just giving its opinion. But I was shifted into the state team, in the New South Wales team, out of club cricket pretty early. I hadn't scored a great 100, actually, at that stage, I don't reckon. I'd been through the under-19 system and had a bit of success there. But as far as an actual first grade 100, I don't think I'd peeled one off. So there was a bit of a speculation there from the selectors that I was going to come good, but I wasn't ready to be punching on in there too much earlier, I don't think. I think the ins and outs in the New South Wales team, which then led me to move to WA, that was all great experience, the highs, the lows, and forming me as a person and a cricketer, as I then eventually was able to get elevated up there. And the blokes, certainly the bloke in the wicket-keeping role that was keeping me or anyone else out of the Aussie team, he was doing a reasonable job, Healy, I reckon.
Well, I was going to ask you about Heels, my mate Gilly, in that... how hard was it for you to sort of overcome the love of that Ian Healy had? Because your selection sort of really divided the nation, to over exaggerate it massively. But he was such a loved player, and he performed for a long period of time as well. Did you actually ever think about the public's opinion of you or what it meant to sort of replace a great in Ian Healy?
Yeah, well, the good thing was, I talk about all the various experiences you have. It's good to draw back on them, and hopefully you've learnt something. It was a bit of deja vu, really, because when I did a few years earlier move to Perth, mate, Timmy Zura was the one that I replaced here. And tell you what, they're a parochial crowd over here in WA. And the locals didn't like a young, unknown New South Welshman coming in, up out seating the crowd favourite here. So I got absolutely creamed over here. I got booed onto the field all the time. And at the start of my career, it was small town, so there was always in the press, on the radio, discussion topics. I had one little kid waving to me in about my third game for WA, where he was waving to me, and finally I thought I'd won over a fan, so I waved back and he yelled out, "Gilchrist, go home." So it was a tough initiation over here in Perth. And then I suppose all I wanted to do was try and not beat Tim Zura, who was a really, really talented cricketer and clearly played for Australia as well and been a long service for WA. But just, I'd not try and be him, but just try to get my standards and level of what I was doing and looking to achieve up near his, so that it didn't feel like the team was missing anything. So too, when I took over from Heels, it wasn't, I loved Heels. I loved watching him and learning from him. And so when I got in there, it sort of felt like I'd been through this process before and was pretty comfortable with it.
Yeah, you unseated Emery, Zura and Healy and then went on to be the greatest keeper batsman ever. So I guess they've got some good stories. I mean, I guess this question is a bit connected, Gilly. I was listening to your commentary on Fox yesterday as we go to air, and Graham Smith was talking about an identity crisis in Australian cricket. It's interesting that you speak so highly of Ian Healy and generally have a reputation of being someone who's quite a good bloke who succeeded really well. And you mentioned Australia was lacking natural aggression. So, given you're someone, let's accept that you're a good person, a decent bloke. What can you explain to us then, to you, what aggression means in cricket, and why does it sometimes feel to many others in Australian cricket that you sort of need to be a bit of a prick on field to succeed?
Oh, No, well, I don't subscribe to that theory that you need to be that, need to be a prick to succeed in there. I think, I can't really put my finger on exactly what it is that you need to have on the field. I think you just need to be, and all this talk around about this elite honesty, I feel a bit sorry for Justin Langer in that sort of internal messaging for his team, that he's trying to spark something within in this rebuild, and then someone lobs it out there on social media and everyone's carving into that, that in their change rooms they've got these words that really it's no one else's business. But I just think it is about being honest with yourself. How do you play the game? What you're comfortable with? I wasn't a big sledger because the moment the words left my mouth, I was officially nervous that I was going to either drop a catch or get knocked over next ball batting. So I was pretty hopeless. It's not that I didn't ever sledge. I got involved in a few singing matches out there and gave it as good as I got when I got revved up. But I didn't go out there looking for it. Others do, obviously. There's plenty of blokes, plenty of personalities that go looking for a fight out there. So it's just about being honest to yourself as to how you're comfortable playing your cricket. But we were just brought up that that's the Aussie way. That's what was passed on and passed on down. Mm. But you can't, even in trying to inherit that and carry it on, you can't manufacture it and you can't, try to be something that you aren't really. So I'm not paying too much attention to this whole, Aussie teams are always sledges and always aggressive on the field. Some will be, some won't be. Some will have big personalities and others won't. So I don't think it needs to be something that is forcefully ingrained into any setup, because if it's false, it's going to shine through.
I mean, you played largely in the era just before every single little comment got picked up. I mean, there was a stump mic back in your day, but there must have been a lot of things said on the field that left you raising your eyebrows extensively.
Well, it's funny talking with Junior Mark Ward yesterday and Warnie and Graham Smith just before we went to air. We were talking about this whole sledging stuff, and I said on air in our pregame before that game against South Africa, the opening match on Fox, we gave Graham Smith a fearful touch-up on his debut, verbal touch-up. We certainly tested him out, as was the natural way, wasn't it, at any level of cricket. A rookie coming out on his debut, sort of get in his face a bit and test him out. But he didn't have a problem with it. He just thought it was, I think he wore it as a badge of honour that we went at him so hard. But Junior, in that comment, said, "Oh man, there was heaps worse things said when we were playing compared to now." So a bit puzzled as to why everyone sort of flares up about sledging. But I don't think that it's sledging or the words that are being passed out there. There's been a lot of really over the top aggressive sort of body language and posturing and walking up, getting in your face. I mean, they're not good images, but just saying a few things that's no drama. I don't think anyone has a problem with that.
Gilly, we'll move into throwdowns, which is probably part sledging, if we're honest. it's all very light, and the joke's wrapped up in the question, so apologies for the indulgence. But I'll start with the first one, Gilly. In 2015, news.com.au ran a headline titled Adam Gilchrist's Epic Bender. It wasn't clickbait. It was Matt Hayden explaining quite thoroughly your strategy for defeating jet lag. For the benefit of listeners keen to understand jet lag strategies, can you please explain your theory?
Explain my theory about that, about my approach for jet lag? Is that what you want?
Yes, please, in response to the headline, Adam Gilchrist, Epic Bender.
Hop in. hop in. You just got to hop in. Like, seriously, first night, absolutely knock yourself out, and then you're in. You're in your sleeping pattern. Away you go.
But according to the article, Gilly, you did it for four nights in a row and then said you wanted one more night.
That's what I was going to say. I think that article related to that. I actually, having been pulled up by team management to just settle it down a bit, I did ask if they would allow me one more night, and they did agree to that. So that was good. I went home with 140 in the World Cup final. I've got to be happy with that, don't I?
forgive it. Gilly, you grew up on a quarter-acre block in regional New South Wales. Plenty of space, fresh country air, siblings competing against the backyard. The idyllic Australian upbringing. I live in a small two-bedroom house in inner-city Sydney, which sits under a flight path and has a minimal backyard in what is a slowing property market. How do you suggest I raise my young son to play cricket for Australia in this urban environment amid such economic uncertainty?
Wow. I tell you what, I don't know what I can come up with there.
The end of backyards, though, Gilly, I mean, you're right.
There's a slight hallway?
There is a slight hallway, and there's not a lot of space on the leg or offside, so he won't be very good square.
Okay, so you're going to play straight then. Play straight.
Gilly, Schlenker accused you of cheating when you batted in the World Cup final of 2007 with a squash ball in your glove. How difficult was it for you to come back from your 12-month international ban?
Yeah, that was a strong accusation, that wasn't it? It was a performance-enhancing device, apparently. That was one of the quotes. My challenge to the Sri Lankans or anyone else that questioned it, say, try it out. See how bloody uncomfortable it is and see how you go. Batting with a squash ball in your glove, but it seemed to come off all right. The thing is, I'd used it a few other times and it hadn't worked so well. On balance, I was happy with the outcome.
Gilly, a few names here for you. Warren, McGrath, Hayden, Langer, Ponting, Gilchrist. Who was the biggest alpha male of this group and why?
We'll strike Mark War off the list immediately. I guess that was one of the options there.
It's up.
The king, big Warnie. He's pretty forthright in what he says, what he pursues. He's the best ever at what he chose to do in life. He's a good leg spinner. Other than that, I think he wins the title.
Great. Gilly, with the CA chairmanship vacant, is that something you could see yourself doing one day, or are you a bit short on Anchorman quotes?
I'll just leave that CA championship alone.
Correct.
How's this? I messaged my old man yesterday saying first day in my new job. Messaged back. That was when I was on my way to Perth Stadium for the first ODI. He messaged back said, "You're taking the chairmanship." well connected he is.
Your second ever test match, Pakistan v Hobart. You and Justin Langer put on 238 and you chased down 370 in the fourth innings for a famous victory for Australia and each other. Justin absolutely leathered one to the keeper of Wasim Akram, was given not out and blamed a clicky bat. For years, he kept the lie of a faulty bat handle before finally admitting that he smashed it. Is this an example of elite honesty?
Yeah. I think he's allowed to do that, a bit like tax. 7-year rule after that. Is that right? So I think he waited the 7 years and got out of there. I wasn't sure where you were going with that partnership, but my very quick recollection, the main standout of that was post-game, big celebrations, get down the post-match presentation. Richie throws it down to Tony Gregg. God love both of them. And Tony said, interviews Justin. He's man of the match. That's fantastic. And because of the sort of euphoric situation we were in, and it was a bit of a record run chase, they decided to get me in. And Tony says, "Oh, Gilly, that looked like a fantastic pitch out there." He said, "It really looked like a good wicket. It held together well." He said, "In your test career so far, how would you rate that wicket?" And I just sat there and I thought, I don't know what to say here. So my answer was, "Well, it's in my top two."
Gilly,
this where is it back to you, Richie?
probably the last one here, mate. It's a two-prong one. Do you think Cricket Australia's profits first, win at all costs culture is what inspired Michael Clarke to endorse a failed Queensland-based cryptocurrency startup? And B, what's the weirdest thing you've ever been asked to lend your name to?
I've got to be careful what I say about anyone taking on any endorsements. My very first actual sort of non-cricket related, cricket equipment related. So really, you know, very fortunate as a youngster and through the coming up through the grades to have bat sponsors and so on. But my first endorsement commercial relationship outside of the game, Crown Forklifts. Which is a natural blend. I mean, you can see easily see how a cricketer can promote a forklift company, can't you? I mean, it's a go-to at the time. Yeah. But I, my manager,
you can travel with
my
a
manager
forklift
received
license,
from a, sorry, my manager received via a facsimile, because that's how long ago it was, received a picture of a forklift with a really one of those big sort of red no smoking signs through it, and that was all it said. No words were needed.
Fantastic. Gilly, thank you for taking on us a wild journey through your cricket career and views on cricket. You've been a very good sport about it. I mean, we still, I guess, extremely honoured to be talking with one of the absolute greats of the game, definitely on the field, and it would appear off the field as well. So thank you very much for joining the Great Cricketer, mate. It's been a long time coming, and it's totally our pleasure.
Absolutely. Pleasure's all mine. And I know it's a light-hearted look at cricket mostly from you blokes, but in all seriousness, I think the joy and pleasure and humour that you bring for a lot of people who have been through that process, a very important process that is great cricket and part of the whole structure, I reckon a huge applause to you blokes. Keep it up.
Cool. Well, we're retiring now.
It has been referred to as the best sports writing tribute to a particular sport since Fever Pitch.
Does it do anything to enhance literature? Would be another question.
Another. I wouldn't even call it literature, really.
And to round off the show, hashtag AskTGC. Some good questions have come in this week from all corners of both the world and the internet. Donny Garcia says on the Twitter machine, he says, "Hi, fellas. Have thoroughly enjoyed all facets of your work over the years. Keep it up." Thanks, Donny. My question is two-pronged. With the seemingly inevitable selection of spin youngest, Lloyd Pope, who has proven to be very talented, does Cricket Australia need to start readying the Australian public for possibly the most non-rig, pipe or salad-based selection since Mark Cosgrove's ODI selection? And if yes, how do you suggest they do this? Letter drop? Banner behind an airplane?
Communications question. A bit of a
first
softening
first,
up of the
very
the
cheeky public. You ask a two-prong question. Let's fucking avoid that in the future. Lloyd Pope's hair, though, looks magnificent now and flowing, but judging by the actual hairline, I feel like it's going to go very quickly. My question to you guys, fuck his questions, he's mine to you. Are we ready for a bald, red-headed leggy?
Mm-hmm. Well, those seem like contradictory things, a bald, red-headed.
They're like, you know, kind of like receding, like Tom Gleason style.
Pez, didn't you say this last year? You said like it's a high for it. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's a high for it. And also it's extremely, like, dead wispy hair, and I say this, you know, advisedly. Like you can tell the hair while it is sort of voluminous at the moment, but it lacks life. It flops, and
so it's quantity, not quality.
And the forehead is high, so I think those things combined would suggest it's probably covering a horseshoe.
Okay, it's covering a horseshoe, Dave.
Any follicle specialists who want to chime in on that, please.
Okay, so we have to prepare the public for this selection. Non-salad, non-pipe-based. How does Cricket Australia do this?
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, it presumes that the campaign hasn't already begun from Cricket Australia. I believe it will take, because we're so committed to, like, chess and pipes, it will take sort of 2 to 3 years. I'd be looking for, a bit of a soft communication
so
play.
So, like, a drawn-out communication strategy.
Yeah, documentary, like 30 for 30 documentaries on Murph Hughes right. and stuff. like on all non-pipes, or, like, a sort of bad rig Australian cricketers, 30 for 30. So I'd go to ESPN. Cricket Australia make those documentaries as well.
Yeah.
Just softening the ground for Lloyd.
Okay. This is probably my favourite question of the week, and it comes in from an anonymous English cricket journalist who is a real person and well-respected. He says, "I have it on pretty good authority, genuinely, that the battered South African alpha king, Faf du Plessis, refers to his fists as Dolce and Gabbana. If it is possible to look behind the sheer brilliance of this, not a given, does the panel know of any other players, grade or higher, who have nicknames for body parts?"
Oh, where do we start? Yes. And specifically, one body part. I knew a bloke called Pins, though, just like because his legs were really good and they were always waxed and good definition in the calves.
Pins, yeah.
Pins.
Okay.
Pinsy.
I'm sure we've told this story in the past, but, like, Dave, you and I played with a guy in, like, rep cricket junior age stuff, and we just called him Teeth.
Yeah.
Just because that was the most noticeable body feature.
He had prominent teeth.
But he was a 14-year-old boy, and that was definitely bullying.
Yeah.
But look how successful we are.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between like a really well-thought-out, personally attributed nickname to do with a body part, and then just the Australian trope of like just calling someone the opposite of what they are, so a tall person, pigeon. Tiny. Yeah.
Pigeon.
Yeah, it's not you look like a pigeon.
I played cricket with a guy who nicknamed his dick Brad.
Right.
Do with that information what you will. Can we talk about, though, like the actual, like, why does Faf de Plessis naming his fists? What's he doing with his fists? Is he going out with, like, knuckle dusters?
And why Dolce and Gabbana? Yes. Like, is it high fashion? Or what is it high fashion?
About? Everything about is so alpha. Everything about it is just incredibly alpha. All right, next question. Scott Donaldson on Twitter, I think. He says, my own cricket career came to a premature end. As a plucky but limited opener, my last three innings resulted in ducks, the latter two of which were Golden Ducks, LBW. I was then summarily dropped from firsts for a bloke who had been piling on the runs in seconds, my younger brother. I took this setback on the chin and moved away to uni, never to darken a cricket pitch again. Fast forward a few years, and today I'm supposed to be taking my 8-year-old son to his first net session. My question is this: should I take him along as promised, or be a good father and make him stay home and watch TV, thereby probably saving him a good decade or two of his precious younger years? Thanks, SD.
Yeah, it's certainly a crossroads as a dad, isn't it? He can see the perils of going down that path of exposing his child to cricket, and therefore all of his child,
He's clearly worried about it, isn't he? Like mere hours before he goes and does it, he's consulting us, amateur psychologist.
I know what I'll do. Sure. I'll write to TGC.
They won't get back to me until he's actually gone to the net, though. So this could all be moot.
Well, I am sitting in front of two fathers, both of young boys. Like, are they going to play cricket?
It's so funny how many people come up to you and go, oh, have you got him in the nets yet?
Yeah.
He's 6 months old. Yes, I have.
How do you do?
Don't inflict your own failures on your son. I think is the question.
James Hawthorne on Facebook. I was in an investment briefing being held by a firm on Wednesday morning. As is common, there was a lengthy discussion about portfolio theory, specifically alpha, always desirable in portfolios, and beta, usually not a priority but merits inclusion given the recent pullback in markets. As the discussion continued, a client who is a partner at a major law firm remarked, "This sounds just like the great cricketer." I'm not witty enough to turn this into a hashtag AskTGC about the parallels of cricket's beta era and adding beta to portfolios now because markets are oversold. But TGC did offer a great opportunity for some rapport building with this guy. You've got some listeners in some unexpected places. By the way, last week was the best one yet. Thank you, James. Who wants that one?
Yeah. It's just a great comment more than anything that we can appreciate on many there, levels. But I just wonder whether the partner actually vocalised that to the room of business guys, or they just quietly took the questioner aside and said, "This reminds me of the great cricketer." Mm. Hopefully, just to a room full of blokes.
When I moved to London, I had to like find a job so I could make monies to do things with my wife. And this is background. And there was a job that came up from a company called Alpha Sites, and I sort of naturally went for it just purely for the joke. Mm. Something else ended up coming up, but then at the second job that I ended up getting. They've just been advertising for a project lead for their beta community. go for that. It's just fun. Yeah, alpha and beta really just transcend.
They're everywhere, though. Because, like, I don't know about you guys, but just being part of TGC, like, some words you just walk past and they'll just stand out to you. Yeah. Like, an apartment next to mine was being sold by Alpha Real Estate. Yeah. You go to a butcher. You want a chop? Well, yes, definitely. But what about some meat, sir?
But why, like, I mean, we're not using the old phone book anymore. Like, being at the front of the phone book using an A for your company isn't beneficial anymore. You just all, there's like 60 million companies called Alpha.
It does go to, you see Alpha everywhere, don't you? Like, it does go to show that in boardrooms and kind of like committee rooms everywhere, people see the word Alpha and go, yeah, people will buy that. People want that. They want Alpha. Yeah. In that.
Reese Fennell. Hashtag ask grade cricketer. That's not the correct thing, but I'll get it anyway. Hey guys, love your work and just had a question for yous. Didn't know you could pluralize that. I'm a young fast bowling all rounder and have a good rig and pipes. I already don't like this question. Wow. This is so self-indulgent, but go on then. And have been told that this would make me a good fit in grade cricket instead of the yuck park shit I currently play. Okay, you got me back, Rhys. However, being an avid listener of yours, I can honestly say the thought of doing so puts the fear of God in me. Should I A, continue taking wickets in the most meaningless form of a pretty meaningless game, or B, almost certainly destroy my love for the game and leave me scared and traumatised for life? That's actually quite good.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of grade cricket in Reece already. Like, he's sort of managed to, like, throw in a few kind of positive elements of his game into that question. He just managed to just warp them in there. Should I continue taking wickets in park cricket? Oh, yeah, okay. You take wickets too. Oh, I've got a good pipe and rig. I think he should go to grade cricket and just experience that. I think it'd
but
be good for him.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of social awareness about Reece because, you know, he's just explicitly said, I'm a young fast bowling all-rounder and have a good rig and pipes and have been told this would make me a good fit. Have you ever read any of our literature?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think he should experience some grade cricket.
That's the end of another show this week. Thanks as ever for those who wrote in for hashtag RCGC. And please, we want some more hashtag escapegoats because we want to know how you escaped from cricket and how that furthered your life, be it romantically, professionally, or health-wise. Next week is a huge bumper show because the guests just keep getting better and better. Of course, there's been a new change in governance in Cricket Australia. And we are interviewing the CEO of Cricket Australia, Kevin Roberts, in person next week. We're all going to be in Melbourne. We're going to be in the same room. Fingers crossed if that comes through. And so that's who's on the show next week. Thanks as ever, boys. Pez, before we go.
To play us out, we had a tweet this week from a band called The Backs. Not exactly sure where they're from. Normally we ignore most people tweeting to us because we've become too big for our boots, obviously, and that's going to hurt us later on down the track. But they have written to us, and this was the tweet. They said, "G'day, Choppers. We've just released our song on the Bradman myth and shot a music video starring our friend Annie Fox as Don Bradman. I thought you may or may not enjoy, and we all very much enjoy it." So we've asked The Backs whether we'd be able to play out their song on the Don Bradman myth. It references sectarian issues and all sorts of things, so we really enjoyed it. Thanks to The Backs for letting us play this out for no fee at all, because it's all about exposure, as we've learned over many, many years. Hope you enjoy the tune. We'll catch you all next week.
Problem with the Irish, the family.